A recent New York Times piece says age discrimination is alive and well in the workplace, but it's hard to prove. Have you ever been the victim of age discrimination? I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We will talk with our guest this hour about ageism, which is not only holding unfair attitudes about older people, but younger people as well. And she is on a mission to end ageism. We'll wonder if you're ready to join that mission. We'll welcome your questions, your experiences, your examples at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Ashton Applewhite, a writer and activist who speaks against age discrimination. She is the author of This Chair Rocks, a manifesto against ageism. Applewhite writes the question and answer blog called Yo, Is This Ageist? Her TED Talk about ending ageism came out last week. I just watched it this morning, and we have posted it on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, if you haven't yet. Good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you for joining us, and congratulations on your TED Talk having more than a 500,000 views already.
Thank you. It's exciting.
Well, what? First off, what is your best working definition of ageism?
The formal definition is stereotyping and discrimination on the basis of age. I think of it as any time we think differently about a person or a group of people on the basis of how old we think they are.
Yeah, for example?
That kid couldn't possibly do that job. That, you know, I think of it, actually, I was in the hospital. I just turned 65, and so many of the doctors look incredibly young. My niece is, in fact, in her second year of residency, and not thinking, oh, my God, how is that young woman going to know where my appendix even is?
Well, I know what you mean. I guess congratulations or happy birthday with 65. I hope everything's all right. Did you have your appendix out?
I did not have my appendix out. I made that up because it's a funny word.
Okay, yes.
But thank you. Yes, I quit my job.
Oh.
I quit my half-time job to become an activist full-time. But I am, you know, an outlier in that regard. An awful lot of people in my age in particular, I'm sort of mid-center in the baby boom, were really hit by the Great Recession. If they had retired, hadn't saved enough for retirement. If they got laid off, they were in trouble too and have had tremendous difficulties staying in or re-entering the workforce, and it's really a big problem.
Yeah, and we started with an example of stereotyping or discriminating against someone based on how young they are. At what age do you notice older people facing this kind of ageism?
Oh, geez. The federal law allows you to file for age discrimination starting at age 40, and that's a pretty old law. That's the Americans with Disabilities Act. And I think it happens. I think it happens in life earlier than 40. I know that especially in tech, which is sort of the epicenter of ageism, because there's so much emphasis on the fresh and the new and the young in Silicon Valley, it can start in your 30s. The average age at Google, average age of employees is low 30s. At Facebook, it's 29. In Silicon Valley, engineers are getting Botox and hair plugs before key interviews in their 30s. There was a horrific quote in a Technology Review article about a year ago of a guy. It came from a doctor who does Botox, but I suspect he's a reliable source or they wouldn't have interviewed him, saying a guy came in and he said he had a big job interview and he said, I can't look like I have a wife and two little kids.
Oh, my goodness. So,
that's a pretty terrible indictment of society, where you are less desirable because you have a mortgage and kids. What's up with that?
Yeah. And you point out in your TED Talk that these are white men in their 30s who are getting the hair plugs and the Botox when that's not necessarily the person you think of getting discriminated against in the workplace.
Yeah, skilled white men. So as I say in the talk, imagine the effects further down the food chain. It's devastating.
And yeah, we actually were interested in talking with you because of your TED talk and your mission to end ageism. But we also noticed this New York Times article that was recently published on Shown the Door, Older Workers Find Bias Hard to Prove. So do you think that's happening a lot?
The burden of proof for age discrimination, thank you, Sandra Day O'Connor, actually, she wrote the majority opinion, is higher than it is. You have to show that you are being fired because of age alone rather than that it was a contributing factor, which is the standard for racial discrimination or discrimination on the basis of sex. So it's difficult. Another bigger issue, in from my point of view, because I am an activist and I am seeking to change the whole culture around aging, is that an awful lot of people are reluctant to bring suit because they don't want to identify as older workers, because of the stigma in the world and because of their own internalized ageism. There was a really good article about what companies could do to make life easier for tech workers, and one suggestion was that they introduce phased retirement so that it would be easier for people to transition out of the workforce with some support. And a woman commented, well, gee, people aren't going to want to out themselves, was her phrase, as older workers. So you better change that. It's a great idea, but call it part-time work. Don't call it phased retirement. As long as we are pretending that older people don't retire and that we're not old, we cannot possibly address the situation at the base where it needs to be addressed, which is that we all get old and there's no shame in it. And that we should be encouraged and supported in transitioning out of the workforce, and which, of course, also makes room for younger workers.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you about some figures in Wisconsin. Nearly 1,100 people filed complaints with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and 20% of those related to age. How does that compare with your experience?
I do not have national data. I know that suits are on the rise, for sure. Steadily, and I know that the EEOC just won a landmark victory against a fast food restaurant based in Texas, which has restaurants in 20 states, and it was one of these places where the women employees were supposed to wear skimpy shirts and shorts and all of that, and they just were rampant, Post-its on resumes saying old hag. And, past her prime and disgusting stuff. And they did get a multi-million-dollar judgment. I think that as it's such a complex issue. The thing I like to compare it to is the women's movement. It seems like just the way it is. But, 50 years ago, the idea of women running Fortune 500 companies seemed absolutely, unimaginable. And now we know, of course, that women can and do run giant companies as effectively or even more effectively than men. We need to change the culture around this idea that to age is to lose value, not just as a worker, but as a human being.
Yeah, and we'll talk about how to change the culture after our news break. But just before news, Ashton, how did you become so passionate about this this issue? Why are you an activist against ageism?
Well, this is the time for the stirring anecdote about how I get laid off, which is does not exist, sadly. But what happened to me is that I started, I mean, in hindsight, I was afraid of getting old. I was in my mid-50s. So I was inspired by a comment of my mother-in-law's. She was in her 80s at the time, and she and her husband were booksellers. And they said, why don't you write about something people ask us all the time, when are you going to retire? And so I thought that was a great idea because it was safe. It was positive. It contributed to this notion of old people always continuing to contribute in traditional productive, air quotes around the productive, ways. And I started learning about longevity. And everything I learned in 5 minutes, not a lot of deep investigative reporting, was more nuanced and more positive. I'll give you one example.
Wait, give me that example after news, because we do have news coming up, and then we will also take questions and examples for our guest. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with a guest who advocates for ending ageism. She argues that getting older isn't a depressing, embarrassing process. She says that the experience of aging can unite people. And we will welcome your thoughts, your questions about ageism. Have you experienced ageism? What happened? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Our guest is Ashton Applewhite. She is the author of This Chair Rocks, A Manifesto Against Ageism. She also writes the question and answer blog called Yo, Is This Ageist? And her TED Talk about ending ageism came out last week. You can see it on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And Ashton, I apologized. I had to jump in for our newscast. You were going to give us an example of what you learned when you first started researching ageism.
Now I'm going to give you two examples. Okay. Well, one was I assumed that the odds of ending up in a nursing home were pretty good. And it turns out that the percentage of Americans over 65 in nursing homes is 4%, and it's dropping. And I also assumed that older people were depressed because I figured, you know, it was sad to be old and you were going to die soon. And it turns out that the longer people live, the less they fear dying, and that people are happiest at the beginnings and the ends of their lives. And not just rich people and not just married people. That is a function of the way aging itself affects the brain, and it's true around the world. And the biggest, you know, and to me, looking through my activist lens, that's not only, you know, Google U curve of happiness, by the way, because I didn't believe it when I first heard it. Think what that curve would look like independent of a culture that tells you that getting old is going to be awful and that fills us with all apprehension, even though as we get older, we know, even if you don't have a shred of social or political awareness because most people don't, of course, we know that it's different from the way it's portrayed in the media. Of course, there are losses, and sometimes it is embarrassing, but it's embarrassing because the culture tells us we should be embarrassed to get old, that to age is to fail. And I would say aging is an achievement.
Yeah.
And we need to work, you know, the first big change has to occur between our ears. In our attitude towards our own aging, if we're ashamed to be old, then that is a hindrance to looking to saying to your employer, I feel that I'm being discriminated against because of my age. You know, we're not ashamed to be Hispanic, and now thank heavens we're not ashamed to be gay anymore. So age needs to we need to change our thinking about growing older. In the same way.
Yeah. And there's also the fear that many of us have, and you say so, that is probably, it's not really warranted, the fear that we are going to get dementia or Alzheimer's or that, that senior, so-called senior moment that we shouldn't be referring to is the start of something really bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that our fears about aging are not real, you know, whether running out of money, ending up alone, those fears are real. And I am no Pollyanna about it. But what I am on a mission to do is to ensure that we hear both sides of the story, that there is enrichment as well as loss, right? There are all kinds of gains. And the dementia, no one knows this, but it's out there readily available. And I have a very active This Chair Rocks Facebook page, by the way, where I post everything. I also have a blog. Alzheimer's, rates of Alzheimer's and other diseases of aging are on the decline precipitously. Your odds of getting Alzheimer's are about 20% less than they were for our parents' generation. And no one knows that. And because we hear all this talk about dementia, and when you can't remember where you put the car keys, you think, oh, crap, you know, next I'm not going to know where the refrigerator is. Those predictions it's easy for them to become self-fulfilling prophecies, and not just in the physical domain, in the social domain. You know, I can't, I am ugly because I have wrinkles, right? I am useless because I don't know the name of the artist who, you know, I'm not up on pop culture. If the culture says, you know, you are old and therefore you should go away, it's very easy to internalize those messages. And I think, you know, as I said in TED Talks, when I lost my car keys in college, I didn't call it a junior moment, right? Kids forget things too all the time. So again, if you don't remember what the keys are for, you may have a cognitive problem. Most of us do suffer some memory loss. Some, you know, that maddening thing where you can't remember the name of the movie you saw with what's-her-name last week. But that's all we lose. Most of us are going to lose some mobility, but it's not going to turn us into housebound wrecks, right? It's a continuum, and almost everyone navigates their life and continues to get enormous pleasure out of it right to the end.
Speaking of that movie that we don't remember the name of, Barbara.
Oh, that one.
Barbara in Madison has an example or a story about an experience she had with reviewing a movie. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Good. Tell us what happened.
Well, I was in my late 50s, and I was walking through a shopping mall, and I was stopped and asked if I had time and would like to review a movie preview and fill out a questionnaire. And I did, and the young man picked up the questionnaire, and he says, now I have some demographic questions. And, of course, one of them was my age, and when I told him, he stopped and looked at me and said, we're not interested in people your age, and tore up the paper in front of me.
Oh, my gosh. Because they only wanted the young people's opinions or something, Barbara.
I don't know. I said, you know, maybe I should have been pleased that he was thinking I was much younger than I was, but I wasn't. I was quite
good.
Angry.
Yeah, well, so that's ageism, huh?
Wow, that is an ugly story. I'm glad you weren't pleased, and I'm glad you told us that story because it's shocking. Because and one, you know, the snappy comeback we can never come up with is, gee, would you say that? Would you rule me out on the basis of being a woman, or on the basis of being African American, or being left-handed, or being in a wheelchair? The answer is no. So it's important to make people realize that discrimination on the basis of age is the same as discrimination on the basis of anything else about ourselves that we cannot change. It is ethically unacceptable. So that's a disgusting thing to say. And the problem with accepting a compliment, you know, you look so young for your age, it's hard to not see it as a compliment. But when we do, we're reinforcing the idea that younger equals better, right? Mm-hmm. And that is the heart of ageism. And I mean, at the real heart of ageism is denial. We don't want to acknowledge that we are getting older, even though, of course, everyone on the planet wakes up a day older. So you're saying, oh, great, everything's staying the same. You know, I'm doing just fine. Well, nothing stays the same. And that's not a solid foundation on which to build a sense of self or a career.
Yeah, but doesn't doesn't society, doesn't our culture, doesn't Hollywood want to, you know, come up with that blockbuster that's going to appeal to that younger demographic, and commercials are the same way? And I mean, isn't that what's going on?
Who has more money, 20-somethings or 60-somethings?
No, certainly 50-somethings,
I mean,
yeah.
Absolutely. You know, people over 50 control something like two-thirds or three-quarters of the spending income, right, of
right.
the disposable income in this country. So this is, I'm glad you brought it up, an incredible example, and it's not just entertainment, although entertainment is arguably the most ageist of all. Hollywood is, I would say, the epicenter of ageism in the U.S., a lot dueling with Silicon Valley for that mm-hmm. honor, that it is a case where ageism trumps even the bottom line, that products are only marketed to younger people. Sometimes I think of it as the way it was when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s. It was okay for girls to dress to be tomboys, but not okay for boys to dress like girls. It is okay for old people to do quote-unquote young things. Of course, there's no such thing. There is nothing that younger people love to do that some older people don't love as well unless it involves extreme athleticism, right? And yet the advertising industry continuously markets to that, especially TV, these antiquated markers like the Nielsen ratings, to younger people out of sheer, unexamined, ignorant, stupid ageism. And, you know, it's a bad idea. I mean, a classic example are those marketing or checklists, you know, which go like, you know, 18 to 23 and then 23 to 34, 35 to 40, whatever. They end at 65. As though everyone over 65 buys the same stuff and does the same things, when it is literally, biologically, and socially the opposite. The longer we live, the more different from one another because everyone ages at different rates, physically, cognitively, socially. So, of course, a group of 17-year-olds, every person is different. But those people have a lot more in common, developmentally, socially, career-wise, than a group of 47-year-olds who have a lot more in common than a group of 77-year-olds who have a lot more in common than a bunch of 87-year-olds. The longer we live, the less our age says about anything, about what we're interested in or capable of, which is why ageism is not only wrong, but stupid.
Jamie called. He is a 25-year-old truck driver. He says older drivers look down on younger ones. He says they're critical of the kind of trucks that they use and other things. And he says older drivers call the younger drivers seat fillers. So maybe, what's wrong with that, Ashton?
What's wrong with that is it's a generalization on the basis of age, and that's ageism, right? Any broad statement, you know, millennials are selfish, boomers are greedy. I'm sure some of those younger drivers are, you know, not as good drivers as people on the road. I'm sure any younger driver listening to this is going, geez, what about those, you know, older drivers who might fall asleep on the road or aren't as safe? And speaking of which, I do think that drivers and pilots and surgeons, people whose job affect the public safety, should be regularly tested, of mm-hmm. course. But the criterion for continuing to hold on to your license should not be how old you are. It should be how well you do on that test. So I think, you know, all prejudice pits us against each other to maintain the status quo. That's the job of prejudice, right? So black factory workers against white factory workers, instead of joining forces to get a better wage. Workers, moms who work outside the home, arguing with stay-at-home moms about who's a better mom, instead of organizing together to close the damn wage gap. You know, the younger workers and the older workers, truckers, and the younger truckers should be finding common cause because, as I think most of us know, the trucking industry is under huge threat from automation. And if you all want to hang on to your jobs, you're going to be a lot more effective if you're not arguing about who's a better trucker and thinking about how to meet this challenge to your livelihood and your professional identity, young and old alike.
Yeah, let's take another call from Liz in Slinger. Hi, Liz.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm sorry?
We just said hello. Go ahead, Liz.
Oh, okay. My husband and I were went on a little bit of a road trip out for dinner, and the waitress took our order, and we didn't know what we wanted to drink. Went up to the bar, and the waitress or the bartender carded me, and she looked at my driver's license and said, "Oh, when's the last time you got carded?" And I looked at her and I said, "About 10 seconds ago." And she looked at me and she's like, "Wow, you look amazing for your age." And I'm only 40. She said, "I would have never thought you were that old." And I thought, "What is happening here?"
Oh, how insulting, too. Well, and again,
yeah. So she... something that simple, and I, yeah. But the comment that she made, "Oh, when's the last time you got carded?"
My compliments on coming up with a really excellent, snappy answer.
Yeah, 10 seconds ago.
"But you look good for your age" is a classic example. It draws attention. People mean it as a compliment, but what it really is saying, it's drawing attention to your age in a way that actually doesn't feel like a compliment, because in this culture, to be called out for your age is not a compliment, right? And I'm glad you asked this, because it is the one snappy answer that I have come up with. When someone says, "You look great for your age," say, "You look great for your age, too."
No matter what age they are?
No matter what age they are, and just let it hang there. Let that little uncomfortable silence hang there, because that's what we want. We want that moment of reflection of that person to say, I mean, she sounds, you know, like not terribly with it. So, but I think she would have gotten it if you said that, because she has to think about why what she meant as a compliment doesn't sound like a compliment. I mean, young lady is a kind of snippy thing to say, even to a young person, and to an older person, it is devaluing. And it also assumes that everyone your age looks a certain way. You know, you couldn't look anything besides your age, even if you had 17 facelifts, right? That's the way you choose to look at 65, right, or whatever age you happen to be. So another reason it's offensive is that it reinforces stereotypes. It reinforces the idea that younger is better. And if you accept that compliment, you are doing it at the expense of all the other women your age who don't look quite as good as you.
Yeah, you know,
and that's not too good for solidarity either.
I was just at the drugstore the other day, and the clerk, who was younger than me, was calling me dear and honey. And I thought... I just thought that was weird. I don't know if that was if she calls everybody dear or honey, or she just calls older people dear or honey.
I read this fantastic piece recently that opened my eyes, which made an analogy between starting to be called sweetie at who knows, our 50s, our 60s, and being called like honey when you're 25. In the workplace, or some other derogatory thing, because you're a cute young thing, and now you're a cute old thing. And they are both techniques that objectify us, right? And for older women, it's disempowering and it's desexualizing, neither of which is acceptable, right? And she said, why don't we say, like, okay, you're 65 now. We're going to stop calling you, Grace or Virginia or Annabelle, and we're just going to call you sweetie. How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Right? Like, let's call this trend, which I thought was a brilliant act, on a piece of political theater. Suppose at a certain age, all women just become sweetie and all men become dearie. Like, what's up with that?
We will talk more about what's up with that and what's up with ageism, and wonder if we can end ageism when we come back from news. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about ageism this hour with a guest who is on a mission to end ageism. So, do you hold certain attitudes? Do you stereotype people, discriminate against people based on their age? Have you ever had this happen to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest says that we would all be much better off if we would end ageism. And she says that really everyone is an ageist, and we'll talk about that and what we can do to stop it. And we welcome your questions and your examples. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Our guest is Ashton Applewhite. She's a writer, an activist. She speaks against age discrimination. She is the author of This Chair Rocks, a manifesto against ageism. She also had her TED Talk released about ending ageism. It came out last week, and it has already been viewed more than 500,000 times. So, Ashton, when you say everyone is an ageist, what do you mean?
Everyone is biased. You know, no. I think we're all racist. I think we're all sexist. We all, you know, have a view of the world that is shaped by our own experiences, and we all make snap judgments about human beings because because a stranger is walking towards you, and we make those instant calculations in order to step out of their way, in order to survive in the world and negotiate a complicated world. The ideal, of course, is to judge each person according to what they are capable of, and, you know, to get to know them a bit rather than coming to a snap judgment because it's a man, because it's a person a different color from you, because they were rooting for a different, sports team, because they did or didn't vote for the same presidential candidate as you. We make shortcuts because they're necessary to navigate the world. When it comes to age bias, I say and think ageist stuff all the time still, and I'm, you know, steeped in awareness. This is a new idea to a lot of people, you know, and once you start to see age bias, I mean, the first step is to look at your own attitudes towards your own age and aging, right? I mean, that's, you can read the first chapter of my book for free on Amazon, and it describes how I went through that process and went, oh, I make judgments all the time about myself and other people on the basis of how old they are. Why do I do that?
Because,
and then
for example, you might poke fun at yourself for having that senior moment, or you might say,
right,
oh my gosh, look at all those wrinkles or whatever.
Right. Or just, you know, there's an older woman in the aisle in the airplane ahead of me, and I'm like, oh, it's going to take forever to get off this plane. And then I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I just said that. You know, it's not okay. You know, it's no more okay than, you know, someone with two kids or someone with a disability, right? It impoverishes us. And, you know, there's like the idea, I mean, we understand now that it is not okay to allocate resources by sex or by race. We still do it. But at least there's a conversation saying it's not okay. And yet you have conversations all the time about training younger workers instead of older workers, funding schools for young people instead of continuing ed for older people. And that is just as unacceptable. Healthcare, right? Why should we pay for healthcare for old people who are going to die soon when we could spend it on kids? That entire line of reasoning is unethical and unacceptable,
yeah.
Period.
Well, I'm gonna confess to something. When I saw you on your TED Talk, it did cross my mind, and I'm going to blame our culture, our society, in part because you look wonderful, and I thought I'm going to say the thing that I shouldn't say. You don't look like you're 65 years old, and I know that I shouldn't say that. I don't know if I look like I'm 58 years old, but there is a certain, isn't there? I mean, that you have our culture is saying that, you know, that, oh, if you have wrinkles or gray hair, or your skin is your chin is drooping or something like that, then you're not as you're not considered as vital or as as beautiful as
right. Because we live in a society that values people, that prioritizes how you look, right? And that is not good for us, especially women. Women are judged twice over for how we look and how old we are. And, of course, the two converge. So women are doubly burdened by age, by the way ageism and sexism come together. You know, there again, there is no one way for 65 to look. I already got flamed on the TED website, like, I wish she didn't, you know, cover up the signs of her own aging, to which I responded, like, the wrinkles are all mine, and I actually put the white in my hair. I don't have gray hair. And I put the white in because I figure everyone's going to think I dye my hair otherwise, which is neither here nor there. I will say that the TED editors pick very flattering camera angles. A lot of them are angles from slightly below. You know, I don't know how old I was when I finally figured out, like, oh, footlights. Why, you know, Tallulah Bankhead needed footlights.
Well,
so
now
it's a very flattering video.
I have these overhead lights in the studio. Now I know what the problem is. No, I'm just kidding.
Right, there you go. Blame the light.
But seriously, don't do that. Don't.
I look good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that I am not ashamed of how I look.
Yeah.
And I really think that that has power. You know, if we don't swallow this narrative, especially you women out there listening. Like I say in the talk, it's like, does any woman in the audience really believe, older woman, that she is a lesser version of the person she was when she was 21? I don't think so, right? We may think we're less attractive, but that's because we're brainwashed to believe it. Mm-hmm. The way heavy people are brainwashed to believe that because they have cellulite, no one's going to want to have sex with them. That is a culture that tells us that how we look is the most important thing, and that we need to buy expensive things to fix something that is not a problem.
Yeah. Let's get some calls in. Jen in Wausau is with us. Hi, Jen.
Hello. Thank you for this great program. It's wonderful. Yeah, I was going to say I'm almost 50, and this has been happening for quite a few years, though, that when my birthday comes around, people, even sometimes people that you've just met, kind of pat you in the arm and they say, oh, are you 29 again? Or and it just drives me crazy. And I remember thinking before it started, and I would observe it happening to other people, when that starts to happen, people think that you're old. And when it started happening to me, I'm like, oh, and it just shocks me. And I'm not, I don't want to be 29 again. I think 50 is wonderful, and 50 is a gift, and I hope I get to be 100. And I just think aging is probably one of the greatest gifts we have.
Yeah.
And so I just hate that patronizing, oh, are you 20 again? And oftentimes, you know, are you 29 again, sweetheart? And so it just really bothers me.
That's a great example, Jen. And I love how she says she doesn't want to be 29 again. And I have to admit, I don't either.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, a good thing to do, Jen, thank you for the wonderful call and for the laughter in your voice, mm-hmm. you know, is to say to whoever gave you that card, you know, why would you think that I want to be 29? And again, force them to just reflect for a minute on the message that they gave you and how it made you feel and why they feel that way, because that's how we change the culture. You know, not be a jerk about it, not be aggressive, but call this out. I wrote a really cranky blog post about a month ago called, If Aging is So Awful, How Come No One Wants to Be Younger? Right? I mean, as we age, even people who are full of fear about it wouldn't want to move their game pieces back on the board unless they could bring their present-day consciousness with them. I mean, aging is depicted as loss, loss, loss. And again, losses are real. You're going to lose some physical function, and you're going to lose the people you've known all your life. That's just going to happen. But nothing else is inevitable. And there's also this gain. It's an additive process, too, right? The epigraph to my book is a quote from Anne Lamott. We contain all the ages we have always been. We know this, right? You know it, Joy. The woman who just called in, Jen, knows that. We all have that knowledge. Let's tap into that as a counterweight to this narrative that, oh, it's all awful and it's all going to suck, because that message comes from society. We make it up and we can unmake it.
Here's a comment from Tom, who emails, it is almost impossible for older employees to change jobs. I had eliminated my education dates from my resume and only listed my most recent 10-year employment history. When I stepped into the interview, everyone was shocked as I was clearly 15 years older than they were expecting. I did not get the job. What's your reaction?
I hear stories like this by the dozen. It is deeply dispiriting. It is bigotry. It is unacceptable. I wanted to mention that ProPublica, which is a public, publicly funded investigative journalism site, is asking for stories of age discrimination. They're going to, in the workplace. They're doing a big thing about it. I think it is important to do what you have just done, which is to go public with this story in every way you can. It doesn't give you a job. It doesn't put food on your table, and I understand that. But, you know, people understand now that diversity makes companies work better and makes them better places to work. Look, obviously, at the story of Uber as the price that companies pay when they pay some sort of vague lip service to diversity but don't actually make it part of their culture. I ask people what they think of as criteria for diversity, and everyone says race, and everyone says gender, and some people say disability, and so on. And then I say, what about age? And nobody says, that's a dumb idea. People go, duh, obviously age is a criterion for diversity. So in that setting, I mean, you want the job, you don't want to piss people off, but try and introduce that idea. Say, you know, I mean, it would be amazing, except I would not have the presence of mind to do it. You know, when you walk in and you see their faces change, you know, to call that out, say, gee, I notice a change in the room. Is it because of my age? And say, you know, wouldn't you consider, what do you hold as criteria for diversity in your company? Right?
Yeah.
I am not criticizing you. You know, those are the kind of things we think of, you know, at 3 a.m. and, you know, not if we're panicked about paying the rent.
Ashton, we have less than I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have less than 30 seconds, and I want to know if you are hopeful that you can end ageism.
I'm hugely hopeful because we've already gotten so far with race and with sex, because the next generation understands that diversity is built into the society, that it's not going to go away. The ground is plowed. So everyone needs to join this movement, because we are all old or future old. If we don't end ageism, it's going to affect us all and pit us against each other. And because we need to work together at all ages for all the causes that matter to us.
Thank you so much for being with us. Ashton Applewhite is a writer and activist. She speaks against age discrimination. And her TED Talk about ending ageism is on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Thanks to Keely Bultina for producing the program. This is the Ideas Network.